Module 2, Patent Basics. In this module, you'll be exposed to a few of the basics of patents, including the USPTO's confidentiality code, the filing date issues associated with patent applications, the difference between inventors and assignees, and who the power of attorney may be granted to, the different fees associated with patents, learn about small entities, the discounts granted to them, and maintenance fees. You'll also learn about the different mailing methods for submitting an application and the relevant documents to the PTO. Access. Only certain patent-related files are open to the public. The rest are kept under the lock and key of the Patent and Trademark Office. Pending non-published patent applications are not available to the public. It may take years for an application to issue into a patent, although the PTO will freely discuss and share the invention within its examination room walls, members of the public will not have access to the contents of the patent application until it is published. Not only is the general public prevented from accessing the contents, they can't even find out that the application exists. But there is a loophole. Members of the public may be granted a request to view a particular pending application. There is some paperwork involved. The individual must send in a petition to the PTO stating reasons why they should be granted access to that particular application. A copy of this petition must then be serviced or given to the patent applicant or owner. The major reason for servicing the applicant is to allow the applicant or owner of the patent the right to grant the petitioner access to only a portion of the application as opposed to the entire application. There are times when a patent application contains material that is sensitive to national security. The PTO will not hesitate to place a secrecy order on these. Secrecy orders prevent anyone without top secret clearance from viewing the application, even after it is allowed to patent. Our government has the right to place a secrecy order on whatever they believe meets the criteria. Issued patents not under secrecy order are always accessible to the public. Filing dates. The date the PTO receives a particular patent application is a very important date to remember. You can think of it as the application's birth date. If the application is allowed to patent, the date protection begins will be the filing date of the application, not the date the application was allowed or accepted to become a patent, as you might expect. The major reason for this is that others may send in applications during the patent pending time period. In situations where a number of patents covering the same invention begin flowing in, the first filed application will usually gain the patent. The length of the patent term is cut a little short by using the filing date, but it is usually more of a benefit to the applicant than a loss. By using the filing date, applicants may begin marketing the product before the application issues without fear of losing the idea to someone else. Here's an example. Joe files his patent application July 1st, 2013, and his patent is finally granted on October 15th, 2014. The filing date of Joe's application is July 1st, 2013. The subject matter will have been protected ever since July 1st, 2013. So, if anyone else sends in a patent application claiming the same exact subject matter after that date, the PTO will likely reject it. Priority claims. There are a few interesting twists with regards to patent application filing dates. For example, an applicant may apply for a new patent and try to claim the filing date of a patent they had previously filed. Remember, the earlier the filing date, the more likely an inventor is to get his idea patented before any competitors do. Also, the earlier filed application could in fact prevent the new application from being granted, since two patents can never be granted for the exact same invention. Therefore, the applicant will have to claim priority of the earlier filed application in order to receive the second patent at all. An inventor may claim the priority benefit of a previously filed foreign application or one that was previously filed in the U.S. These are called foreign and domestic applications, respectively. There are two different laws covering these alternatives. 35 U.S.C. 119 subsection E and 35 U.S.C. 120 discuss claiming priority of domestic applications, while 35 U.S.C. 119 subsections A through D and F discuss claiming the priority of foreign applications. Either way you file it, there must be at least one common inventor between the two applications. Domestic priority claims must occur while the two applications are co-pending. That means the earlier filed application must not be abandoned or allowed to issue. Rather, it must be pending. Foreign priority claims must occur within 12 months from the date of the earliest foreign filing. Inventorship. Inventorship sounds like a pretty easy topic to grasp, and thankfully it is. Simply put, the inventors are the individuals who invented the subject matter in the application. They conceived of the idea and either reduced it to practice on their own or had someone else reduce it to practice for them. A single individual or a group of people may hold the inventorship. Corporations or other such entities can never qualify for inventorship. Only the people within these entities can be the actual inventors. However, there is a difference between the inventorship and the ownership of a patent. While corporations may not be labeled as inventors, they may own the rights to a patent. In instances where joint inventors are responsible for inventing the subject matter, the joint inventors may have worked as a team or entirely isolated from one another. One inventor may have worked on one aspect, while another focused on an entirely different aspect of the invention. They needn't have even known each other at the time they were developing the invention. Assignments. As mentioned previously, ownership is altogether different than inventorship. The ownership of a patent or a patent application is always held by the inventors unless they have assigned it over to another party. Even patents may be bought and sold just like any other type of property, be it real estate or an automobile. These assignments or transfers of ownership may be made to an individual or to a corporation. Whomever the assignment is made to is called the assignee. If all the patent rights are assigned, the inventors may lose all their privileges to the patent, even mere access to it. Non-inventors may even file an application if the invention is assigned to him or her. Assignments may be made as the application is sent in, during the application's examination, or after it has been allowed to issue as a patent. Regardless of when they are made, assignments must be recorded with the PTO in order to be recognized by the PTO. If there is no record of the assignment by the PTO, it's assumed that none exists, which may cause trouble down the road. The inventor will always be considered the owner of the patent rights unless there is a recorded assignment. The information necessary to record an assignment consists of a cover sheet and a fee. The cover sheet must include the identifying information concerning the assignee of the patent. For example, the application or patent number along with the filing date must be supplied. If the assignment is made before the patent is allowed to issue, the assignee will automatically be listed on the patent. However, if an assignment is made after the patent issues, the assignee will have to file a petition in order to be listed on the patent as an assignee. The power of attorney. An inventor doesn't necessarily have to hire a patent practitioner to help write the application or to help with the examination procedures. He or she may attempt it all on their own. Applications that are sent to the PTO without the help of a patent practitioner are termed pro se applications. With all the complicated details and the expense involved in patenting, filing a pro se application is not recommended unless the inventor really plans to spend the time necessary to learn the ins and outs of patent law. Individuals who are not recognized patent practitioners are not allowed to help an inventor write their patent application. Only registered patent practitioners may help an inventor write and prosecute their patent application. In addition, registered patent practitioners, even agents, may act as the power of attorney regarding the patent application throughout the entire examination process. This means that the agent or attorney may sign certain paperwork. However, many documents may still be signed by the actual inventor. They may authorize withdrawals from the inventor's deposit account, and they may receive all correspondence concerning the application. Note that the PTO only sends paperwork out to one address per application. The power of attorney may be granted to a registered patent agent or attorney, but as a rule, firms can never be granted the power of attorney, only individuals. Alternately, in the case of joint inventors filing a patent application together without the help of a patent practitioner, the power of attorney may be granted to a single inventor, even though they are not a registered patent agent or attorney, in order to cut down on the confusion. That single inventor will be able to sign most of the paperwork alone and will receive all of the correspondence. He or she will have a heavy load of responsibility. It's always possible for the power of attorney to be revoked if it's not working out. Reciprocally, the acting power of attorney may withdraw from the responsibility as long as he or she follows the proper procedures and sufficient notice is given. Fees. A filing fee must be sent in for every patent application that is filed. However, the filing fee is not due immediately. The applicant may choose to send it in later during the prosecution. There are different fees for different application types and different fees for the various documents and petitions that may need to be sent in during the prosecution. The fees constantly change, so it's recommended that individuals always check on the current fee before sending any money in. As you can imagine, filing a patent application is a fairly expensive ordeal. To make matters worse, there are more fees involved than just a filing fee. The PTO charges a fee for virtually every step. At best, a patent applicant should expect to pay a filing fee and an issue fee. In addition, maintenance fees must be paid on every utility and plant patent that is issued. These are paid after the patent issues to keep it from expiring. At worst, an applicant may have to pay these fees, plus fees for several petitions, fees for late filed forms, fees for extensions of time, disclaimers, appeal-related fees, and fees for a request for continuing examination, among many other fee-related extras. We will discuss all these extras later, but for now, just realize that filing a patent application is expensive and requires sending in numerous fees. The PTO does not refund money if the patent application is ultimately rejected. Small entity status. The PTO will cut certain fees in half for applications sent in by inventors qualifying for small entity status. Independent inventors who have not assigned the invention, small businesses with less than 500 employees, and nonprofit organizations like universities all qualify for small entity status. However, a petition will have to be filed in order to receive the fee break. Once this petition is accepted, the applicant will qualify for a 50% discount on many different fees. These include application filing fees, petitions for an extension of time, related appeal fees, issue fees, disclaimers, and maintenance fees. Some fees are not reduced. Maintenance fees. Allowed patents require maintenance in the form of a fee. Maintenance fees must be paid on all allowed utility patents. Nothing is really gained by paying the maintenance fee. No fancy certificate is sent out. No special tune-up is performed. But if the owner doesn't pay, the PTO abandons the patent, causing it to expire before the set term has run its course. So the inventor must pay the maintenance fee in order to keep the benefits gained by the patent. Maintenance fees are due at three time periods throughout the life of the patent: 3.5, 7.5, and 11.5 years after the granting of the patent. There is also a 6-month grace period, but paying during the grace period requires paying a surcharge in addition to the payment of the maintenance fee. If the payment is not sent in before the expiration of the grace period, the patent will expire. It is possible to revive a patent that was abandoned due to a missing maintenance fee, but that requires a hefty petition fee in addition to paying the late maintenance fees. Mailing procedures. There are several choices when it comes to sending in paperwork to the PTO. Certain methods of mailing are not allowed for specific types of correspondence. There's express mail, certificates of mailing, the EFS, which is the electronic filing system, and certificates of transmission. Never expect anything to be plain and simple when it comes to the PTO. A certificate of mailing is a piece of paper stating the date that the listed documents were mailed. When using a certificate of mailing, the filing date is always the date the correspondence was sent, never the date it was received. These certificates are basically a promise sheet that lists out the documents that were sent along with the date they were sent. Express mail can be used for sending in any type of document in any type of application. It is a reliable and easy method of mailing through the United States Postal Service, or USPS. The filing date is the date on a correctly labeled express mailing label filed with the USPS. No certificate of mailing is required when this method is used. Faxing may be acceptable for some forms sent to the PTO. When faxing anything to the PTO, a certificate of transmission should be sent along with the document that is being faxed. A certificate of transmission is a paper stating the date and time the listed document was faxed to the PTO. The filing date for a document sent with a certificate of transmission is based on the time stated on the certificate of transmission, as opposed to the time it was received by the PTO. This mode of transmission may not be used for many different documents, like paperwork requiring an original signature or papers that will obtain an application filing date. And the list goes on and on.